Oh my goodness, it's time for another podcast. Today on the show, we have Sam Starsmore, a good friend and a good guy, and somebody who has a lot of lived experience and can share with us his expertise on recovery, as well as let us celebrate Gamban. That's right, I snuck it in there. Gamban. For all your blocking needs, your phone, your tablet, your computer, block that online gambling using Gamban. Go to Gamban.com. Also want to give a shout out to Epic Risk Management for helping to sponsor this episode of the podcast. Yes, Epic Risk Management. Check them out. They're good people as well. Lots of lived experience there too. I haven't put out a podcast in a little while. I've been a little busy, but here it is. Here's an episode. We did record it a while ago, I'd say. A little while ago. So some of the references might be a bit dated, but here it is anyway. Enjoy the show. Hello and welcome to All in the Addicted Gamblers podcast. My name is Brian and I haven't placed a bet since July of 2014.
And my name is Jeff. I haven't placed a bet since July of 2015.
Jeff, one of our favorite people is here today.
Certainly one of yours.
What?
Oh, of course, one of ours. Of course. I'm just teasing.
I believe he helps you run the support group, Jeff. So you should be nice to him.
He is an amazing person and somebody that was instrumental in
an inspiring figure in recovery as well. Sam Starsmore is here. Sam, how are you? Good to see you.
Good to see you both, guys. Thank you for asking me along again. It's been nearly 2 years now since we did the first one in April 2020. So, yeah, brilliant to be back.
Holy cow, it has been a long time. Time flies.
Episode 69, to be in fact. And we're not, what, now 299 episodes in?
299, yeah. We're waiting. The 300th is coming out.
You've been busy.
COVID didn't leave. It was a perfect time to Zoom. It was a good time to talk to people through the computer about recovery and gambling addiction. And I think that's what we're going to do here today. Just have a nice little chat about recovery, because I think it's treated all three of us pretty well. Sam, would you remind the audience of your, however you track your last bet or your last meeting, whatever your date is?
Yep. So I introduced myself as, my name is Sam. I'm a compulsive gambler. And the date of my last bet was the 1st November 2019. So it's an interesting topic that in itself, in terms of people kind of registering whether they actually announce the last bet, whether they announce on a day-by-day basis, my name is Sam and I haven't gambled today, etc. It's very much what works for that person in their own recovery, isn't it? But I think milestones are important. For me, they are. It allows me to track progress. And as we spoke about a couple of years ago, that bet in November was a relapse, which I'm sure we'll kind of dig into a little bit further and see the progress since that relapse as we speak some more.
Well, since you brought it up, the date prior to that, how long had you been in recovery up to the relapse?
I've been in recovery since the 31st of December 2016, so we're talking over 5 years now. And I entered recovery at the age of 24. I had over two years of abstinence before two relapses in the year 2019. So it was a rocky year, but stuff that I've learned from, which has got me to where I am today in my recovery. So yeah, I know me and Jeff have spoke at length about this during our meetings, but I've kind of reframed relapse itself in terms of not fearing it or not dismissing it, because if I do that, and if I put pressure on myself, there's a likelihood that it will cause more chaos. If I'm okay that a relapse is potentially there, it's more easier to get around, let's say.
Yeah. You and I have that in common, which is that I also went to GA, I entered recovery, and I had two and a half years in, and I relapsed. And it was... I know the reason I relapsed, and it was my complacency. It was I stopped going to meetings. You know, after 2 years, I kind of thought, well, I can miss a meeting. It's not a big deal. And I ended up missing several weeks in a row. And eventually I just thought, I can do this on my own. I don't need to go to meetings. And that led to me, I can go gamble again. And then the cycle continued. But I stayed out, I think, for about 6 months, and then I went back to meetings. And that, I mean, that was a hard 6 months because I basically reset all the good that I had done financially and then went back. But I'm glad I went back. A lot of people don't. And I'm glad you came back because a lot of people don't. Was that hard for you to come back?
I think because it was such an instantly I told someone, which was the best thing I could have done. I told my wife, now wife, then partner. And the second person I told was Jeff, on both occasions. So being accountable for the actual action itself, that really helped in terms of getting straight back into a meeting, speaking things through with family, friends, etc. So if I'd have let that stem internally for a few more days, I could have lived a lie even longer and the consequences would have been harsher as well. And, you know, in the meetings that we conduct, we always say, if you relapse, try come back as soon as possible, because you'll be able to get yourself in a frame of mind that you won't self-loathe as much potentially if you let that relapse stretch into active addiction. I was quite fortunate that I had a frame of mind to say, I've messed up, I've done something wrong, I can't lie about it again, because the amount of years that I spent lying about this addiction crushed people around me. So yeah, I was wise to own up to it. I'm not saying that it was right and it's a good thing, but it's finding a solution to a sticky situation.
Do you know why you relapsed?
I'm sorry.
Do you know, Sam, do you know why you relapsed? As far as I know, that I stopped going to meetings and that led to my relapse. Do you have any idea of the frame of mind you were in of why?
Yeah, so I'll talk about the first one in February of 2019. That was a pure and utter urge to gamble. In the April, a few months after, the fixed odds betting terminals in the UK were set to have a stake reduction from £100 per spin to £2 per spin. So that was floating around my mind thinking, I've got not much time left. Bearing in mind, I've got 2 years of abstinence behind me and 2 years recovery. And I started watching YouTube videos. I started watching streams of people playing these fixed odds betting terminals, playing roulette in the weeks leading up to it, thinking, well, if I do it this way, I'll get it out of my system. Knowing full well that if I had the opportunity, I probably would actually go and gamble. And it was a Sunday evening. I'd been to the rugby with friends. We went to the pub afterwards, had a bit of alcohol, a bit of Dutch courage, and snuck off and went to the betting shop with bookmakers. And the worst thing about that relapse is that I won quite a lot of money and I found the sense to walk out. But the next day and the day after, I wanted to go back, even though I'd told my partner, even though I'd went and sat in a GA room, I wanted to do it for about a week afterwards. So that was a pure urge to gamble. The second one in November was something that frightened me even more, was that I gambled to essentially moderate an emotion that I was going through. And that was an emotion of anger towards a situation with my wife. Something stupid. She wanted to get a taxi home. I wanted to walk home. We walked home. She went upstairs. I stayed downstairs. Again, alcohol involved. And I thought the best way to get back at her for giving me the silent treatment was to shove £1,000 onto an online casino. And just the thought process around why I would do that and how I did that, that scared me. That, you know, nearly 3 years into this recovery program, I've still got the ammunition to do that and I've still got the character traits to do that. So although there were two relapses, there were two totally different ones, and there was much more to learn out of the second one. The first one I can deal with. I'm going to get urges. I still get urges now. I can deal with them. What I can't deal with is me being emotionally unstable and reacting to things in a way that I shouldn't. It's really interesting looking back, but again, two really, really important learnings for me, that I've got to deal with my emotions better. I think I can deal with my urges now to a certain extent. but I do need to get better at dealing with emotions. I've never really addressed emotions, even when I was in active addiction. So yeah, that might have been a bit of a hangover of how I treat people or how I treat people. I'd like to think I've made some progress. There's some steps I put in place, such as sponsorship and the 12 steps, etc., that made me look internally around, why did you do that? You know, what's going on behind closed doors that gets you to that point? And I'd like to think that, you know, there's been many occasions where I've had arguments, but I've not dealt with it in a way that I'd go back and gamble to get back at that person. So work in progress, but yeah, two very different but similar relapses.
Hey, Sam, as you know, some of the topics that we select when we have our group support meetings involve around the importance of discovering why we gamble. And there are people that are on both sides of that issue. What's your feeling in terms of your own experience? And is it important to know why you gambled or why you developed this?
I think it is, because if you do find out why, it provides that element of clarity and may put you at peace. I firmly believe gambling did not essentially give me depression or any mental health issues. It was the mental health issues and the depression that led me to gambling. So I think there was an underlying root cause of me walking into that bookmakers and playing on those machines and putting those horse races on, setting up an online account. At the age of 16, I couldn't deal with what was happening at home with my parents splitting up. And I found this brand new activity that had flashing lights, that had a welcoming sign into the door, that provided a potential avenue for financial gain. And I thought, wow, this is how I'll deal with my emotions, happy, sad, angry, frustrated. I'll come here. So I firmly believe that's my why. I had some internal mental illness at the time, couldn't consume emotion, and I gambled for that reason. It wasn't the gambling that essentially led to the mental health.
So therefore, it sounds like you were an escape gambler from the start, that you were escaping the other issues that were going on in your life, including mental health issues, stress.
Yeah. And that somewhat reflects what we've seen in that second relapse in November, my last bet. It was an escape from what was going on emotionally. And there needs to be other ways and means for me to express those emotions other than going back to what I know and sticking money in a roulette machine or anything of that nature. So, yeah, it's interesting that even at that really, really young age of 16, where, you know, I'm barely educated, that I had those things going through my mind in terms of this is what I need to do next on a daily basis.
So it's interesting, though, because you just said a few moments ago that you really haven't delved into the underlying issue, but yet you've had a successful recovery. I mean, you know, even those temporary slips, I don't think it suggests that your recovery has been anything other than. How are you able to have a successful recovery, in your view, if you haven't addressed what you say are the underlying issues that caused you to develop the gambling addiction in the first place?
I think the main thing is understanding that they might never be addressed or they might never be concluded. It's something that I've got to learn to live with to a certain extent, something that I need to work on. And there's different ways. My medium for that is to attend meetings and to hear other people's successes, other people's struggles, other people's stories and experiences, for me to then think, okay, how does that fit into my life? What can I take away from that particular story or that particular piece of advice? But bringing back to kind of living with this, as I told you in the new year, Jeff and Brian, I'm sure you will relate to this. Just before Christmas, at my work, we have 2 weeks off over Christmas. And just before actually Christmas, I think it was the day before New Year, Christmas Eve, I went into a real, real dark slump mentally. And this has happened before, but this was a painful one. And at the time, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why. Don't want to know why. I just know that I don't like being here to the extent where on Christmas Eve, I'm sat on this very couch with tablets in my hand, contemplating killing myself. No thoughts of gambling, no kind of acknowledgement of gambling, nothing to do with gambling at all. And after a bit of time, you know, I can understand why. You know, in 2021, I got married, I ran a marathon, I got a promotion at work that I'd been working really hard towards. And then there was just a standstill. There was nothing for me to focus on. There was nothing for me to look forward to that I could see in the distance. And that's how I manage it, Jeff. That's how I manage a successful recovery. Focus, putting things in front of me that are achievable and that I can see. And when that doesn't happen, things like Christmas Eve this year happen. And it's scary that I can get into that frame of mind where I just don't see any point of being here anymore. No thought about anyone else again or the impact that potentially have on them. And it's really difficult because 1 week later, I'm out of that frame of mind. And it's difficult to justify to people. You know, I don't want to say there's something wrong with me because a week later, I'm fine. So it's really difficult to manage that within my own head, but also to articulate to other people, if that makes sense.
Did you go seek help after that with a professional at all?
No, not a professional. I was highly advised to. But again, at this point, I'd come out of that phase. So I'm okay now. But I know that'll pop up again in the future.
Yeah.
I can bring from it is that I told someone, I told my wife. And, you know, I went through the emotions that I was feeling. Didn't want to tell her because I love keeping stuff to myself. But she then understood and she didn't have to worry around what was happening or what could have been happening. So, I always find it difficult talking to people other than those who have experienced what I've experienced, if that makes sense. It's not that I don't think they're qualified. I just don't believe they can fully comprehend what goes on in this mad head. It's something I probably should look at. But at that particular moment, I thought, no, I'm out of the dark zone. And I'll be okay.
Do you think when you're in that dark place, do you think that, hey, this is going to be over soon, it's temporary? Or at that point, you're just so consumed with the way you feel that you can't look beyond that?
I can't see beyond that day. If I've got nothing to focus on, nothing to look forward to, then I'm not going to be able to see out of that dark place. It's a cave that's got a shut door, and there's no one coming down to rescue. It was horrible. It was worse than going through an actual relapse, because I just felt helpless. How do I get out of this? I'm wanting to put things in place, but my mind's telling no. So again, that links back to stepping into that bookies at 16, because of what was going on internally at that age. And that still lives with me at 29, 13 years later. And it's fascinating as much as it's concerning. But again, the brain is a strange piece of science that I can't fully get my head around in terms of one day I could wake up feeling on top of the world. The next day, I just don't want to get out of bed. They are common signs of someone within recovery, but that's a common sign of someone who's suffering from mental illness.
So, Sam, let me just ask you one question on this, because I'm quite sure that there are a lot of people that are listening to this and hearing your success in recovery with gambling addiction and hear how proactive you've been in order to achieve that success. And they're thinking, well, why the fuck aren't you doing this with these other issues that clearly are very significant? And as you just said, even more powerful in terms of putting you in that dark place than during the height of your gambling addiction?
I think it's an element that I believe I can control it through the treatment that I obtain with my addiction. And that is true to a certain degree. And you know, Jeff, if I'm not at a meeting for 7 to 10 days, that affects me mentally. If I'm not seeing you, if I'm not seeing all the rest of the guys, if I'm not hearing what I need to hear and getting that medicine, that does affect me mentally. So by utilizing the current tools I've got that I know that I'm comfortable with, I can arrest it. But you're right. You're absolutely right. you know, there might need to be a deeper look in terms of, should there be other avenues that I'm looking down in order to help what's going on internally?
Sam, I'm not going to give you any advice, but I'm just going to tell you in my experience with what I went through, after what I went through another similar dark period. Like after I was inpatient, you know, because they'll ask you in therapy constantly, like, are you having suicidal thoughts? Are you having suicidal thoughts? And my answer was no. And then one day it was yes. And I remember I told Jeff, and Jeff said, did you tell your wife yet? And I said, no, I'm working up towards that. And when I told my wife, you know, I said, I didn't tell you yet, but it's okay. I'm not going to do anything is what I told her. I said, I'm fine. I'm not gonna do anything. And she said, Brian, that's what you said weeks before you almost did something right before my incident. And again, like, you know, you best, Sam, you got to do what you think is right for sure. All I can say is that the help that I did get was very helpful. Going to therapy has been very helpful, even if it's just to bleh everything out of my mind to get it off my shoulders. But you know that because you go to group with everybody in recovery. But if you ever want to chat, I'm around, just because I understand that dark place and how it just springs up out of nowhere.
I think there's a key message here as well that, yes, you can be really successful in recovery, but, you know, life's still there. You know, yeah. Things still happen. You will never get to a point where you're ticking all these boxes to say you are, again, this is my opinion, you are recovered, or your life is complete. Again, I'm 29 years of age and I've got all these stupid things going around my head that I can't kind of take in. Throw in there a gambling addiction, and it's difficult, but you can still have success at the same time as trying to deal with those curveballs that life throw you, whether it's with relationships, whether it's with jobs, financials, or just your own mental health. That's the key message for me, and something that I do try to not oversell to newcomers who are of a similar age to me, that, you know, you don't just do this for a month and you're fine. You commit to this, and you commit to this by helping yourself and helping others as well. So, the grass is greener on the other side, but you do have to water that grass on occasions as well to make sure that it stays that color.
I don't want to obviously continue to harp on this, but it's a very important conversation. And I can't help but, you know, thinking, I get the whole acceptance thing. I get that, you know, recovery from addiction by going to meetings and being proactive doesn't make a perfect life. And we still have to deal with life's challenges and so on and so forth. But although acceptance is part of it, I mean, what would you say to somebody that had a similar situation and wasn't being proactive, knowing that that dark place is going to come at some point? Those feelings, those emotions are going to come at some point. Is it okay to just recognize it's going to happen? I accept that's who I am, and I'll deal with it when it comes. Or do we go to the next level and try to see if there's anything that can be done in order to prevent it from, whether it's being evaluated for medication or seeing, you know, a professional? And that's kind of where I'm struggling in terms of when I hear this about somebody that I care deeply for, it makes me want to ask these questions, you know. So if I'm going too far into it, it's only because I care.
The advice I'd give to someone who was in my position would be different advice to what I give myself, because I'm my own worst enemy. I want to help everyone, but I sometimes don't help myself enough, knowing what I should do. And I don't know what the reason for that is. Simple enough, Jeff. I don't think it's procrastination or complacency. I don't believe I'm better than additional help. Because I've reached out for help numerous amounts of time through different mediums and forums. There might be an element of the unknown. You know, I'm so used to living in this world of gambling recovery and addiction recovery. Throw another bolt in there around, you know, wider mental health or depression issues, or I don't know, bipolar, anxiety. I'm not sure. I don't like to self-medicate, but there could be something under there. And you're right, I'm not going to find out. I'll be able to make the next steps unless I seek that support. But yeah, you make a good point, and I would give advice differently to how I actually go about it myself, which is wrong. But there we go.
Sam, on a slightly different topic, I have to know, how did you run a marathon? And give me the type of athlete you were prior to training for the marathon. You don't have to sugarcoat it. If you had athletic ability and you ran a little bit, let me know that, because I want to take a common person like myself and get to where you got to.
When I was we're going back 2 years now, when COVID hit, I couldn't run 5 kilometers without stopping 8 or 9 times.
Okay.
Whereas I ran that marathon without stopping, which was amazing. And the feelings that I had during it were undescribable pain, mentally and physically. But the feeling afterwards was just amazing. And I did it for charity. I had my friends who were doing 5 kilometers each with me. And we had a lot of people up there on the night, and we raised just short of £4,000 for the cricket club, actually, where I did the marathon. I run 119 laps of a cricket boundary, which is bonkers in itself. But that's one ticked off the bucket list. And again, just pushing the brain, pushing the mind to boundaries that I didn't think I was capable of. And 42 kilometers, 4.5 hours of running around in a circle. It's not something I'd say I'd do on a Friday night all the time, but yeah, just for a one-off, I thought it was really, really beneficial for my own growth. I won't be doing it again anytime soon.
That running in a circle seems much, much harder than a normal marathon that I'm used to that would go through a city or up a mountain and around a mountain. If you're just running in a circle, you have nothing to look at but the same stuff over and over and over. That's got to be hell on the mind.
Does it not resonate my time in active addiction, though? It's running around in circles with the same things. And it was quite boring. And there's a hill on one side of the boundary. So that was excruciating trying to get up that 119 times. But we had music on. As I said, my friends were there, my family were there. So we did the best of what we had.
Did you train, or did you just sort of will yourself through?
I trained for it. Probably not as much as I should have done. It did get postponed 2 times because of COVID and because of rain. But we got there in the end. So I've not done a lot of exercise since. And that was a huge part of my life, knowing that when I wake up or before I go to bed, I'll be doing exercise. So it gave me really good kind of endorphins and dopamine. So I have missed that. I've kind of swapped it now with playing golf. So I'm still getting those kind of still getting outdoors, still doing something I love. And it's good for me walking 10 kilometers around. So I'd like to get back running. That marathon did give me a bit of a dodgy knee as a result. So we'll see where we go with that.
And as far as when you're training for the marathon and you're getting out of bed to exercise and you're exercising before bed, how were you able to do that mentally? Because that's the part that crushes a lot of people, is like, I'm a little more comfortable just laying here.
Seeing that end goal, seeing the result, knowing that it's for a good cause. There was one occasion where actually I planned, we were about 7 weeks out from the actual marathon day, I planned to do a half marathon. And I got about 10 kilometers in, and my body just wouldn't work. My legs wouldn't work. And then my mind went to pot, and I came back home and I was sat at the bottom of the stairs crying. And it does take a strain on you, not just physically, but mentally as well, because you're putting your body through something it's never been put through before, running your first marathon, and it doesn't know how to deal with, all these new substances that you put in your body, all this new food and the sheer amount of exercise and fat that you're burning. So it was difficult to deal with at times, but just knowing that it made me such a healthier person, and there was more positives with the running than there was negatives, definitely. And again, I'd get up at 4 o'clock on payday to gamble, so why not get up at 5 o'clock to go for a little stroll around the block?
That makes sense. Going not to your relapse, but relapses in general, I think of it like a volcano where gambling, the volcano erupts, and then it lies dormant and it sits there building pressure and pressure and pressure. And then that relapse, it explodes again. And I think, like, for me, having relapsed, I was two or three different times. I don't, like, each instance wasn't a relapse. It was one long relapse. And doing that, I learned I can't gamble. Like, there is, I know now. And that's, I think, part of why I've been able to make it as long as I have now, because I know that no matter what, I just can't gamble. There's not any, because I went back after stopping and it didn't work. And then I went back again after stopping and it worked even less. And it caused even more pain. I mean, my final relapse was the most amount of damage I ever did to myself. So do you think in some, not that I would ever encourage a relapse, but do you think in some strange way, it definitely helps your recovery? Because for me, it certainly does. Again, not that I would recommend it.
One of my kind of key mantras, I might have mentioned this when we got together a couple of years ago. One of my key mantras that I live by is that in order to succeed in life, you have to fail, but you have to learn from those failings. And at the time, the horrible, as you know, Brian, the horrible things to happen, because you've got this time period of abstinence and recovery. You've got to tell people that you've done this thing that you said you'd never do again in your life, and you've worked so hard towards not doing. And you do feel like you're back at the start. And those feelings are fine. Those feelings are normal. Those feelings are human. But once a little bit of time passes after that, you then start to reflect on, okay, what happened in the 2 to 3 to 4 weeks leading up to that? What do I need to change? Because you're right, it is a volcano. It doesn't happen straight away. It slowly, slowly builds. And you've got to learn in terms of how, where that build came from. And I've certainly done that both times. I've tried to learn from them. And again, I'm not going to sit here in front of you two and say that I'm never going to gamble again, because I might. And that's much easier for me to process and not put that pressure on myself. Because that pressure itself could lead me, when I'm in a situation where I might gamble, I could cave in at that point. So it's learning from those failures. I know failure is a bit of a horrible word, but it is a failure. And making something good about it, finding a solution. The February relapse in 2019, got a sponsor. The November relapse in 2019, started thinking about my moral inventory. You know, who am I as a person? What do I need to change character-wise, etc.? And then work on that on an ongoing basis. So, learning from failure is massive for me in all walks of life, whether it's running, whether it's sport, whether it's at work. Just having that open-mindedness and willingness to understand where you need to improve and where you need to grow.
Sam, I know you've heard me say this before, but for me, you know, the pain is the great motivator. Remembering the pain of going through some of the experiences in active addiction reminds me that I never want to go back to that place again, and reminds me that I need to be proactive in order to avoid that pain. And in a group like we belong to, we often talk about the value other persons' experiences, when they share it, bring to us, because we can feel their pain. We can feel it because we care. We can feel it because it may remind us of experiences we've had in the past. And I often believe that I need to feel that pain, and I want to feel it through hearing it rather than experiencing it. Because if I experience it, the harm results. But if I feel it through other people's shares, I can get that same motivation. Do you, you know, as someone who relapsed a couple of times while you were pretty active in recovery, do you think that there's anything more you could have done to be reminded of that pain, or to be motivated to more to guard against not slipping back to gambling as a solution? Is that something that was preventable?
You might remember shortly after that second relapse, that's when I put the idea to you that we introduce therapy meetings to the group, so that someone has the platform during that hour on whatever day they like to give their story. Because that's something that I'd moved away from GA at this point, and my only source of recovery was the PG support group. And I'm not blaming the relapse on this at all, but both of you know that once you hear someone's journey, that helps you so much. Once you hear someone who comes back and provides an explanation as to why they've relapsed, and you can feel their pain, can feel how much it's hurting, that brings you back as to why you shouldn't go down that road. I don't think it could have been prevented. It could have been preventable, but there's some other things behind that. In terms of recovery, though, it's just all about trying to expose yourself to as much insights, sadness, pain, happiness, all the different emotions that we all go through during the journey, and taking what you can from that. You know, there's been two or three times over these last 2 years that we've been running these groups that I've been in tears just listening to someone else who I've never met face to face. And you know, that's the kind of relationship that, one, you can build, but secondly, that's the type of emotion that I've never been able to let out before. But now I feel comfortable in, you know, feeling really, really sad for someone for the experiences that they've gone through. And yeah, it's a strange one, but I think for me, Jeff, just constantly getting that cycle of new people, hearing people's therapies, whether it's on a milestone or just an average day. And for those who do unfortunately relapse, you know, as we said at the start, get straight back and tell someone, because you don't know how much you're going to help yourself as much as you're going to help other people who hear that.
I think that's one of the only slightly negative aspect or downside to people having dates or counting days or building to a number is that they think that they have to reset. And that's not what you're counting. You're just making sure you don't gamble today. And so if you relapse, you just make sure you don't gamble the next day. That's all it is. It's not resetting. Oh, I have 2 years and now I'm back to zero. It does, like, that doesn't matter. And that's what I think people sometimes might have a hard concept with, is like, oh, I'm back to zero again. And that isn't what matters. What matters is that you don't gamble the next time. Would you guys talk a little? Go ahead, Sam. You have a comment?
I think there's an element of pride there, though, that yeah, I've lost sure that date and I've now got to produce this date. What are people going to think of me? Am I going to fall down the food chain, the hierarchical ladder? I think there's an element of that in there. I really do. And I don't think that's forceful. I think that's just natural of someone to think that, when we all know that's not the case at all. You'll be provided so much support, so much love, consideration. You'll get the finger in terms of, right, this isn't okay. What are you going to do, and what are we going to do to fix it and make sure it doesn't happen again? But I think there is an element of pride in there as well.
Absolutely. And I never want to make anybody feel bad about their date. That's why from time to time I say this at the beginning when I introduce myself and I say I haven't placed a bet since July of 2014. It's not to be like, look at what I've done. It's simply to give people an idea of where I'm at in my own recovery. That's all, that the reason Jeff and I give our dates at the beginning. Jeff, I just want to ask you, do you remember what you told Sam, and not for the benefit of him here, but for the benefit of the audience, what you told Sam when he told you that he had relapsed so early? Because you were the second person that he told. Do you happen to recall what you might have given back in ways of feedback?
I guess this was the relapse that was triggered by an argument. And, you know, honestly, I really don't recall the details of that conversation, but I'm sure it was something like, you know, just playing it through. I mean, is that how you want to address issues that everyone is going to be confronted with in life? And especially in relationship, there are going to be times where there's going to be, you know, arguments, and there's going to be heated differences of opinion. And if we slip back to that same pattern of using gambling as our escape, or I think in this particular sense, using gambling as a way of, I'll show you, I'll go and gamble. I mean, there's a reason why GA has as one of the 20 questions, do arguments, disappointments, frustrations cause within you an urge to gamble? It's because it is a common experience that we have as people with a gambling problem or gambling addiction, you know, and it's really good to question whether or not, are we really doing it in response to our feeling of being hurt or frustrated or angry, or are we using it to justify what we really want to do anyway? And you can't help but think, is that a suggestion that this is, doesn't just happen out of, you know, nowhere and the situation brings it on. I have to think that it is the result of other things that need to be worked on. And again, I don't remember, to be frank, exactly what we talked about, but I just remember being very grateful that Sam and I did have that conversation and that he did recognize that he needs to come back and do something different. And it wasn't a conversation that I recall where he said, you know, man, I relapsed. So now my whole recovery is unsuccessful, or, you know, I'm back to square one. And I hear that so many times, getting back to that issue of the date. That's the thing that I think that bothers me most about the date. For some people, when they change their date, their brain automatically thinks that they're back to square one. But in reality, we know that's not the case. But I just remember being grateful to, you know, that Sam and I had that conversation and he was willing to talk with me.
I think this has been an excellent chat about relapses. And I think it'll do a lot of good to help people to hear that you can get through relapses. And that's because of the way you handled it, Sam, and the way you spoke about it. So thank you for that. I wanted to talk real quick before we go. Sam, can you sell the group that you and Jeff run to the audience? Because I think there's people in the audience who are looking for ways to recover and forget from time to time that Jeff's group exists, as much as we mentioned it on here. Could you talk a little bit about the group? And why it's a good group to join if people are able and want to stop gambling?
Am I going to get commission on this, Jeff? Yep, okay, brilliant.
Half of my salaries.
Not much, then. I joined this group really early on, I think within the second week of its infancy. And that was actually after listening to this podcast when you first interviewed Jeff. What a sad day to look back on. But I reached out to Jeff after that and we kept in contact for a month or so. And he had this idea that, look, I'm seeing a few people online on Reddit who I believe, you know, the younger generation, they're a little bit disenfranchised with the current treatment and support options that are out there. So I'm thinking of, you know, just jumping on Zoom for an hour or Skype as it was when we were doing it at the start, and just having a chat. And we did that for about 2 or 3 months, once a week. And it's now grown to a point where we've got meetings every day. On some days, we've got 2 meetings. We've had people come, we've had people go. We've got some people who are part of the furniture. But it's a really, really useful support group in terms of we've got these hours of the day, 1 hour per day, where there is a topic picked beforehand by a different chair each time. And you get 3 to 4 to 5 minutes to share on that topic. You get to hear so much different insight from people all over the world. You get to form these relationships that you wouldn't form, you know, within your own local areas. And it's helped me so much. We've obviously now started the young people's group, so under 30s group, which again just gives the opportunity and a platform for those who maybe can't relate to people who have been through loss of house, loss of car, loss of divorce, loss of relationship, loss of children. Those who can't really relate to that, they've got an opportunity to spend time together. And there's 2 meetings per week for them and 7 meetings for just the whole group. And that group has helped so many different people. The success stories keep coming and the support is endlessly there. We've got a WhatsApp group, which has, you know, ongoing chat. And then we've got the Zoom meetings that are held every day, available to anyone all over the world. We have quite flexible timings. But just going back to that support, Brian, last year, again, probably May, June time, me and Libby found out that she was pregnant. And, you know, the ecstasy for the next 4 weeks, I was planning out my life. We were thinking what we're going to do with that spare room. To then find out 4 weeks later that we'd lost the baby. That's a curveball you can never see coming, you can never prepare for. Recovery did give me a platform to try and get through that. But again, the first people I told were the group, because they're the first people I wanted to tell. I jumped on the meeting on that Friday night, I cried my eyes out, and I felt a little bit better because I knew that they'd listen and knew that they could support. And yeah, that's just the type of group that I'm proud to be a part of. And peer-to-peer support and peer-to-peer treatment gets my seal of approval over anything. Being able to talk to someone who has been through the same, if not similar, experiences to you, yeah, it's priceless. Was that to your approval, Jeff? Was that a good sell? Or
yeah, but I think you left one thing out, and that is, yeah, as much as I can spend a lot of time and effort in reaching out to younger people, I can't be that younger person that they connect with. And without Sam, I don't think that this group would have flourished the way it did, because, you know, he has been and continues to be a role model. And a role model is not somebody that has a perfect recovery. A role model is somebody that people can relate to and people can see persevere even when they're hit with challenges, both related to their addiction directly or just related to life. And it's been an absolute gift to have Sam, you know, join me and not only in the group, but, you know, obviously we've become extremely close friends. And sometimes I think about my recovery and where it has taken me, and, you know, with the group, with you, Brian, and the podcast. And I just remember the first time when I thought about hearing early on in a GA meeting where somebody said, I was grateful to have this addiction because it led me to recovery. And my first thought was, they are fucking crazy. You know, how could you be grateful? Or how could I be grateful given the harm that I caused, not only myself, but my wife, my children, all the people that loved me, all the people I lied to. But when I think about where recovery has taken me and the opportunities that I've gotten and the people that I've met, it's just been an absolute blessing. So I have to remind myself that it is what it is. And that was, for whatever reason, my journey and continues to be. Yeah, I think Sam said it well in terms of the group and what it's meant. And yeah.
Jeff, anybody who wants to get in on that group and join that group or try out that group, how do they get in touch with you?
They should just visit Sam personally at his house. I'll give his address right now. And they can find me on Twitter at JPWDEL1955. Or if they're not on Twitter, they can actually send me an email on, oh, look, Sam, the cat now. They can send me an email on joinus at D like in dog, C like in cat, G like in good, and P like in purpose.org.
Perfect. Sam, last question. What are you looking forward to? What do you have going on that you're looking forward to?
What am I looking forward to? We've got an away day at work next week, which we'll all get to see each other. We're a small charity with about 40 people, so it'll be only the second time we've all come together face-to-face since COVID. So looking forward to seeing some faces rather than on Teams or Zoom.
Very nice. Jeff, what are you looking forward to?
Waking up tomorrow.
Shorten the time frame a little bit just in case.
I mean, you know, it's funny when I heard Sam about, you know, talking about things to look forward to. And I used to spend my whole life looking forward to, whether it was on a Monday morning at work, looking forward to the weekend or my next vacation or the next celebration. And I try not to do that now because not so much that, you know, I'm so disciplined, but I actually I'm enjoying life now and I don't need to look forward to it. Looking forward to things are nice, but I don't spend my time looking forward to it. I just, sounds corny, but I just like every day.
No, it's a good answer. I kind of related to when Sam was talking about looking forward to things, because I stopped looking forward to things and I need that extra boost. So I'm looking forward on Saturday, my wife and daughter, or Sunday, one of the two. We're going to go to lunch, and I like going out to eat is just nice. And going out to eat with my wife and daughter will be excellent. So we don't do that a lot, which is a strange thing, but we just don't. So it'll be good. That's what I'm looking forward to. Sam, thank you for your blunt honesty, because that I think is what helps people the most. And you provided us with plenty of that. And Jeff, as always, thank you. And thanks everybody for listening.
This podcast is owned by Lee Street Media, LLC. Music provided by T Vance. Remember, this is a podcast. The views expressed on the podcast are solely those of the hosts and the guests. If you need help for a gambling addiction, please seek professional help.